Welcome to Model Minority Moms, where we talk about the meaning of success in career, family, and life. We are Jeanette Park,
Kate Wong,
and Susan Liu,
Harvard classmates and Asian American working moms who get real about the pressures of fitting in while standing out.
Greetings, greetings, and welcome to another episode of Model Minority Moms. Today, we're going to talk about something kind of interesting, which I'm really excited to talk about, which is looking at ourselves in pictures and looking at them when we were younger or right when the picture is snapped now. Like, how do we feel about it? Thinking about our appearances and our enoughness. I'm curious, how has it started and how's it going and why is it that way? Because I think we are always our own worst critic, but looking at the picture and that gut feeling, like, why does it feel so bad? And why does the past always feel better? It's just something interesting to unpack, because as we have our kids and we tell them we love them, they're beautiful, they're perfect. I think the question is, do we believe that for ourselves? And especially as we're aging, you know, to filter or not to filter? Always a question. All right, I want to kick it off and be like, right now, y'all, like when you look at yourself in photos, but I always think it's so funny because I'll have a stranger take a photo. This is my like funny joke that's not funny to anybody else. I'll look at the picture and I'll be like, that's not us. That's not what we really look like. And then they'll kind of be like, haha, do you want another one? I'm like, no, bye. But I'm curious, like, when you look at pictures of yourself now, do you ever like cringe? Do you feel good? Do you notice the first immediate flaw, your problem areas? Or is it like, it's chill, you know? What is it about looking at your own self-reflection that's so awkward?
I'm excited to talk about this because I feel like it is an intersection of a lot of things we talk about. Motherhood and how that changes you, you know, including like how you think about your appearance, being a woman and how appearances are such a big part of that. It's hard to talk about, but it is. And then also being Asian American, right? And some of the difficulty about being Asian American is about looking different. I feel like now I think I'm in an okay place with how I feel about my appearance. It's not like I think I look like a supermodel or something, but I'm satisfied with the way that I look and I accept it. I feel like, Kate, you have this whole routine around your skincare and makeup and all of that, and I'm still not inclined that way. And I also just feel like makeup in general, maybe I just haven't figured it out, but it just like generally doesn't look that good on me. I feel like I do very minimal application, if at all. But you know, in terms of my hair and my clothing, there's things about that I enjoy. And I also feel like as I'm getting older, looking back on old pictures of myself, and I feel like I look at it with a different perspective now. I think when I was looking at those pictures right after they got taken or a couple weeks or a couple months, I think there was like a sense of a little bit of a dissatisfaction, like looking at more the flaws or what I wasn't happy about. But now I look at them, pictures from like my 20s, my early 30s. And I'm like, oh, you look good. Like you look young, you look happy, you look beautiful. And in a way that I appreciate about myself that I think I didn't previously. Becoming a mom too has kind of like further evolved how I feel about my appearance, because through the eyes of my kids, like they routinely just tell me like, I don't think I solicit these comments, but they're just like, mommy, you're so beautiful or whatever, you know, like to them, I am beautiful. So looking at myself through their eyes. Of course, it's not like they're the most sophisticated consumers, but they love me even if I am still walking around in my pajamas with like eye boogers at 8:30 in the morning on a Saturday because of whatever's going on in their life at that point. I am beautiful to them. And I think in a different but somewhat related way, I feel like I also experienced that as I started dating Jake. But anyway, maybe that's just kind of a snapshot of where I am now, but I'm like interested also in delving farther back, talking about as a young girl, how her appearance was discussed and kind of like how we thought about it, the evolution to where we are now.
Yeah, I just wanted to build upon looking at past pictures. I've seen a couple of me from college and I'm like, I didn't look that fat. But in my mind, I felt so fat. I've always felt a little bigger, not too much more, but a little more. And I always got reminded from my family about that, which was very painful. And so it's just funny now because of looking back. So I'm 38 now. So when I'm 50 or 60 and I look back at my 38-year-old pictures, am I going to notice my crow's feet or my like emerging double chin or my little pooch, little flabby arms, underside? That's where I go to in a photo once it's taken. I look at it and I go, God, I wish I should have angled differently. I wish I could have done another thing. Or wow, I made this picture look horrendous, or my kid's so cute. Maybe I should just take pictures of him by himself. You know, like, it's just the critical mind is so crazy. And I know, like, when I age, okay, I'll get more wrinkly or things will sag in a different way. And then there will always be nostalgia and pining for the past, wishing I could go back to that time. You and I are rationally talking about, wow, we actually looked great in our 20s. It's very rational to be like, oh, well, that's my own judgment. I should just change, be satisfied and accept myself as I am this very moment. Like, why can't we do that?
Well, I think maybe we can. I just kind of came to noticing this pretty recently, you know, as I was scrolling through old pictures. We just moved, so going through our photo albums as I'm trying to organize our house. Yeah, I just look at those pictures differently now. So I'm starting to think, oh, yeah, I should just be more accepting of myself now, because 10 years from now, I'm going to be looking at these pictures and appreciating me. So I should just appreciate myself now. And this is probably also closer to how objectively other people look at me, because I have more distance from those pictures, right? Just like people now around me have more distance from me. But maybe I'm just saying, Susan, it's not like this lost cause. We're still evolving, right, in our mindsets. And I think it's not necessarily fixed.
Yeah. How about you, Kate? I mean, have you done a double take of yourself in past pictures, or do you always look at yourself and be like, I do look good? For the record be known, let's state, Kate has a great handle on makeup. Yeah, the shadows, contour, whatever all those words are, you're always on point. So there's that, because I don't wear makeup.
Thanks. Even with being good at makeup, I think when you're at different ages, we value different things because of the information that we're getting from the people around us and also the standards of beauty, right? I think they do kind of change over time, because I think beauty, it's not just your features. It's how you carry yourself, how you wear makeup, if you wear makeup, what you wear and your confidence, they all impact not only your impression of how you look, but others' impression of you, both like an art and a science. You could have really great features, but if you carry yourself badly or you don't have confidence, it's going to come through in how you look. It's just pretty complex. I actually think I look the best I've ever done in my life now overall. I wish that I had been able to appreciate the aspects of my looks and my youth. Oh God, that sounds so depressing. In my youth. when I was in my 20s, I'm sorry, that I don't have now. For example, face fat. You know, do you guys ever hear this? I remember in my 20s, some older lady was like, she was like, you know, you don't want your face fat now. You want those defined features, but wait until you're in your 30s and 40s. You'll wish you had your baby fat then. And I was like, no, I want to get rid of my baby fat now. You know, because if you look at photos, yeah. And I'm sure both of you, well, Susan still has a lovely face, which
I've small. Got plenty of face fat.
No, but it's contributes to youthfulness, right? And like vitality. Wow. When you have the face fat. My point is, when I was in my 20s, I had lots of that. You know, it helps to smooth out wrinkles and other signs of aging. But I was like always trying to make myself look more contoured, which now I look back and I'm like, oh, I wish I could have appreciated that more. But I feel like in some ways, as a function of who I was at the time, I couldn't have, right? Because I was less confident of myself, because I was also consuming material that was all like, you know, like contour. But now I think I look better, not just because I'm better at makeup, which is true. Sorry, Jeanette, you were going to say something.
Oh, I will also just say, I think that's like a little bit of an Asian thing too, where I feel like we kind of carry the little baby fat cheeks for longer.
Longer. Maybe. Yeah.
I noticed that too. It's like my face is kind of thinning out, but it's also because I'm like losing muscle mass because I don't exercise anymore. Oh, no. But I'm also getting older, but I look back at my younger pictures and I did have these fuller cheeks and I still kind of, anyway, yeah, I didn't like them like when I was younger. But now I look at them and I'm like, look so cute and like so young, you know? So anyway, side note.
Well, this reminds me of a meme. Do you guys remember? A bunch of people sent it to me in college.
Is it about like how Asian women, we like stay like looking young until we're like 80?
Yes, I'll post that on Instagram.
One day we like turn into a raisin.
Yes, that one. It was like explosion. And then you turn into old, wrinkly, fat Asian lady. That's that one. I think everybody was sending that meme around.
But the thing is, like, you stay like looking the same for a long time.
Yes.
Asians don't raisin until you're like 85. And then one day you just turn into like an old Asian grandma.
Yeah. That was what was reminding me when you said that, you know, maybe Asians tend to carry a little face fat in their face longer, which, you know, may be true. So I think I appreciate how I look now. It's not just because of makeup or whatever. I just think that I've come to more accept what I look like now is what I look like now, as opposed to somehow my standards of beauty have changed. But I think also in general, I feel more confident of my whole physical self, because I'm in a place where I think I'm more in touch with how my body is feeling. I'm more aware of how to take care of it. I don't just mean, oh, like massages or whatever. I mean more knowing the limits of my physical body, but also the ways in which I could improve it, right? Like with yoga, improving stretching. And so I think that when I was younger, I feel like I just use my body like a machine. I just took it for granted, including my face, right? Like, it's just there. And you just keep going. I didn't use sunscreen. If I partied, I didn't drink that much water. You know, all these things, right? Because you're just, oh, I have it. It's great. It's, you're taking it all for granted. But now the nice thing with age is that I appreciate everything more because I realize, okay, there are limitations to myself. I think knowing my own limitations and also what is to come, because I've already seen my physical deterioration, including my face, after having kids, I'm like, okay, I can't take this for granted anymore. So at every point, I appreciate how I look more.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at currently, you know? But then I think the conundrum for me when I think about how I think now about my body and then in my 20s, is it inevitable that we're always thinking about ourselves negatively in our 20s? Or is it because of us, because of how we grew up, because of Asian culture, because of the cultural influences? And I think about that because I'm thinking about my daughters, right? I have two daughters. How can I help them navigate that period? Or is there a way to bring more confidence into how they see themselves? So I guess the question is, do you feel like there was a way we could have gotten around not appreciating ourselves more in our 20s or like being so critical?
Could we just go back a little further than that and just talk about, you know, how we thought about our parents, even as children, how what our family said? And I know, I don't know, this feels very superficial, but I feel like it could actually be like a very hard topic.
It's totally linked to what Kate was saying, right? Like how you thought about yourself. Well, it was definitely the direct input is who you're growing up around and what they thought of you, right?
Do you want to go first?
It's inevitable. Someone's always going to go. Whoever feels called, I guess.
I can go first. Well, so the thing with my family is that I felt like there was this kind of storyline. So in my family, it's me and I have a younger brother where like my younger brother was the good looking one and I was the smart one. And I don't know if my parents ever really put down my looks, but I also feel like they weren't very encouraging of them. And I also didn't really fit the standards of Korean beauty very much, like growing up. I mean, I was very thin, like stick thin, but otherwise I was like very dark. I tan extremely easily and I grew up in Los Angeles and ran around outside with no sunscreen. I had freckles, which I still do. And I would get comments from my parents. Oh, this one thing that they would say, I was just like, what do you mean by that? They would always just say, Jeanette, you look really good from the back. They would just say,
what?
Your back looks really good. I don't know. They thought the shape of my head or if I put my hair up. They're just like, you look really good from the back. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, so you don't think I look very good from the front? Is that kind of what you're telling me? I never was told by my parents like, oh, you're so beautiful. You're great just the way you are. None of those things ever. And then the people around my parents, like my parents' friends, like their family friends, would often tell me things like, oh, you know, you could get those freckles lasered off, or there's these lightening creams that you could use. So there were like comments like that. But I think kind of paired with a lot of this was, you know, the fact that I was probably finding my confidence in other ways, like in school, the fact that I performed well in school. I was also doing ballet, which in a lot of ways kind of negatively impacted the way that I view myself and made me more self-critical. But in some ways, I think kind of made me more in touch with my body and gave me the sense like my body can do things. It can be strong. And my relationship to my appearance is, well, maybe I'm not very beautiful, but that's okay. I felt confident in other ways and I felt happy enough with my looks slash. I think I kind of purposely just chose not to think about it too much. And so that's how things were growing up. But it was interesting once I got to high school. And I also didn't have very fancy clothes because my parents were pretty poor a lot of time I was growing up. But I do remember when I went off to high school to Andover, somebody that my parents knew, I don't think it was a family friend, maybe it was like a friend of a friend. She was this older lady. She had no children and she was very thin. She was the same size as me as I was when I was 14. And she had all these really nice clothes and she gave a bunch of them to me because she heard that I was going to go to Andover. And I never met this person, but there were like long wool coats, the kinds of clothes that I never had before. Actually, a lot of people who owned clothing shops downtown that my parents knew, they would just let me come in and pick something out. And I have this one memory of having this dress on. It was a light teal dress. It had these very thin straps and it was from just like a garment factory downtown. So not fancy at all. And I remember wearing that to a party in high school. And then this girl who lived in the same building as me, she was very nice. She was one of these Andover legacy family kids. Her family had gone there for generations. I think her grandmother had some square named after her, like in Boston. You know, she came from a lot of money, kind of like that type of family, but she liked my dress. She was like, oh, I really like your dress. And we weren't friends or anything. We just lived in the same dorm. And I think some experiences that made me feel like there's so much that goes into appearance. It's not just about spending a lot of money, or it's not even just about how you look. It's also about confidence, right? And how you present yourself. So many things kind of go into how other people perceive you. But I think generally, I kind of was like, I'm good with how I look. Maybe I'm not a supermodel, and maybe my parents didn't affirm me, but I feel empowered in other ways. And then I met Jake, and I think we never had a direct conversation about this, but it was kind of interesting to me because I'm like, wow, you find me like really attractive.
Wait, hold on. You never had a conversation about him finding you attractive, or you've never had a conversation about him finding you?
No. I don't think we've ever had a direct conversation about
looks.
Yeah, about looks. Like, okay. Do you find me attractive? Do you like my freckles? But he really wanted to spend time together. And then like if we would walk down the street, like Newbury Street in Boston, and then there would be like those mannequins up with clothes or models with different clothes on, he would always just be like, oh, you would look good in that. Almost like he looked at those pictures and he saw me there. And I'm like, oh, this is very interesting. And then fast forward even more, you know, to having kids and just a little bit of what we were talking about before, which is now I kind of can see a little bit of the glimpse of how my children see me. And they're like, mommy is so beautiful. I have no basis for comparison. And she's just beautiful. It's not like I really think, oh, whatever, I look so great. But generally just like I have moved a little bit from deliberate disregard and being like, okay with it, but maybe not happy, but also just not thinking about it that much, to like more of just, oh, I actually appreciate how I look. Like I have my own distinct look. I appreciate it. You know, in my own way, I am beautiful. I've also thought of this analogy of flowers, right? In the world, there are like so many different kinds of flowers, right? And they all look very different from each other. But each one is beautiful in its own way. And so there's not just like one standard of beauty. It's every person, you know, and I'm a Christian. So God created every person in their unique way, and they have their own beauty. I feel like I'm in a place where I can step into that. So anyway, that's where I am.
Hey, how did your family come? What was the best body part?
I know. I was just like, what is that?
What a weird, like, your back looks.
You look really good from the back.
That's this is what, like the worst.
That's like backhanded.
Oh, right? I'm like, what?
Yeah. It's like saying, oh, I don't know. Yes, I like you as long as I don't see your face.
I like it when your hair covers your face or something. Thanks. It's like that kind of comment. But I didn't have the kind of relationship with my parents or the empowerment in my family where I could like ask, oh, what do you mean by that? You know, so you just are like, okay.
Yeah. So Jeanette, it sounds like you've gone through an evolution with yourself and that you're satisfied now.
I mean, it's not perfect, right? But I feel more satisfied. I feel like I am more okay, and not even just accepting, but more celebrating of the way that I am and the way that I am very different. So I feel like I'm in a better place. Can I just make one addition to what I said, though? So this whole narrative about how my brother is good looking, and my brother is genuinely good looking. I will tell you, you guys have not met my brother, but he, for everything I can say about him, I can say that he is genuinely good looking. He's tall and he's just good looking.
I wish we could post a picture on him. Oh, should I go on your Facebook?
Can you send a picture to us privately?
Now I want to know.
Yeah. When I was a student, like my friends would regularly ask me about how my brother was doing. I'm like, why?
Really?
Why do you want to know?
Oh, so he was that cute.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. One of the things I remember also doing as a child is taking my brother around to modeling agencies with my mom. Because my mom went through this period where she thought my brother should be a child model and an actor. So, of course, I was a translator, like going around to do that. So anyway, that was the underlying role that my brother and I had, right? Which was he was like the good looking one and I was like the smart one. And there was actually this book, a Judy Blume book called Dina. It's a young adult book. But I really remember identifying with that because in that book, there's two sisters and the book is told by, I think, the perspective of the younger sister, but they also have the similar dynamic in this family where their mom has basically labeled her older sister the beautiful one and the younger sister the smart one. There was that dynamic in my family.
I'm going through your Facebook right now trying to find your brother.
Oh, but no, I can totally relate to that dynamic. My sister was known as the pretty sister, and I was known as the one with the crooked smile.
What?
Yeah, I have a question.
I don't think I've heard that one.
Yeah, no. They'd always be like, oh, my God, Wendy looks just like her mom. And Susan, I guess, looks like her dad. It's like Mingheim male. Like, your mouth is just a little crooked. And then I'd be like, okay. And then the body part, I think only my sister ever complimented me on, was that I have nice shoulders. And I was like, that seems useless, but maybe I should do more boat necks. I don't know. For me, I think appearances has always been like, wow, you're a little overweight, Susan, just a little chubby. Ugh, guys, I get these Instagram emails that are like, hey, would you like to be like a ambassador for this product? The latest product is plus size clothing, size 12 to 18. Okay, I'm still like an 8, 10, but I was just like, wow, like AI thinks I'm fat. You know what I mean? Like, we're not fat. I'm just like a little bit bigger. And so anyways, I'm getting targeted right now. But the running line was, if you don't lose weight, no one's going to love you in your life and you will die alone. Okay.
And your parents from your book, you just say this was like very directly said.
Yeah. They said that to me after my mom died from a tummy tuck.
And before.
Oh, yeah. That too. But it was like, I tell you because I love you. And I'm like, do you? Like, wow. And also that my entire life is and worthiness is diminished by someone loving me or not loving me. Anyway, so love was so conditional. It was based around weight. And so that was always kind of hurtful. And so I'd go between like, okay, so I guess I should eat less at the table. And then I feel really sad because then I don't eat my favorite things. And then I'd like stress eat. And then just in general, just around eating, like, oh, you don't like it? Or like, you should keep eating more. You know, it's so confusing.
Yeah.
How food and eating and shame is all wrapped up. There's like almost like you can never eat correctly. But for me, I was like, okay, fine. Like, I'm a little bit bigger. But like, for me, I was athletic. Because I'm really competitive. I'm really competitive in group scenarios. That's why I love group exercise class. If you ever go to class with me, if you want, you can go to my gym. I like grunt when I'm working out. I'm like really intense because I'm like, we're here. We might as well work out hard. So like in middle school, there's this thing called the blue shirt in PE. There's all these like activities you had to do and you had to perform, run a mile. I think, I don't know, like less than 7 minutes or something. Like there's all these things that you had to do to get the blue shirt. And it was really hard. And I got the blue shirt. I was like wheezing and panting to get that mile time, but I got the blue shirt. So I was like really athletic. And to my peers, I was like smart or whatever. But the thing about me, I think with my appearances, I'm going to blame it on my conditioning, but then I'm going to also say I'm completely wrong. I'm frumpy and cheap. Okay. And so I feel like going to Goodwill or like used clothing, because we always did go to Goodwill, or like when I went to Mervyn's, I only went to the clearance rack. You know, like we never bought full price clothing or bought things because you wanted it. You only bought it because it was on sale, you know, and it was usually like the odd looking thing. And so that was like my thing. And then in college, there was a free bin at Harvard by the laundry room. Right.
Was that the free bin or was that the lost and found bin? Because Jake also made liberal use of the lost and found bin. And
yeah, no. Well,
what bin is this? I don't know about this bin. Where was it?
Of course you don't know what.
Jake still has a jacket that he wore the other day from the lost and found bin. Anyway, this is a side note. Jake made liberal use of the lost and found bin.
A.K.A. Look, free bin.
I would really go at it when it was the end of the semester, yeah. End of the year, and everyone's cleaning out their shit and everyone's moving out. And then stuff would just pile up in the laundry room. People were letting things go. So I'd find some stuff that I thought was cool, whatever. Also, like, I didn't have a lot of money, you know? Okay, I say all this, and my sister grew up in the same exact household, and she was hella trendy and really cute. I think it's like a values thing. Like, in middle school, I went to Nicaragua, and we had gone to Vietnam when I was younger, but, like, went to Nicaragua, saw a lot of poverty. I just felt like, what's the point of stuff? Like, it's just stuff. And, like, how vain, no offense, everybody here, how vain to just like get all these nice things or spend so much time on your face. Like there's like other causes that we could be thinking about or putting our energy towards like that. Why? So I think for me, part of it is values. And even now as a 38-year-old, I'm about to go on this book tour and I'm like, I think I might look together. And it's so hard for me, like Jeanette, when we were preparing to go for our Harvard recording in October, we went to Anthropology and I found some things I really liked that looked somewhat okay on me. And I was having like almost a meltdown that a couple of them were full price. Okay, only one was from the clearance rack. And I was like, but I really like this, or it actually does look good on me. But Jeanette, you saw me kind of have like,
oh, I could see the look on your face. You know, you weren't having like a full on meltdown, but I could see the, and I will take credit. I feel like it was fairly subtle. Like it could have flown under the radar, but I felt like I looked at you and I was like, oh, I see that look of I feel anxious right now. And you look very young. Like the expression on your face was like a child kind of being like feeling anxious. Anyway, we had that moment where I'm like, of course, you should like shop within your budget and be fiscally responsible. But a lot of times there's so much more than that, right? About like different financial decisions we make.
Can I tell you? Recently, I've been wearing it, these clothes. And then Marvin would continually says, that's a really nice shirt. He says it over and over again. He's like, where'd you get it? And
but that for Marvin to make this comment multiple times, like a big deal. Okay, guys.
Yeah.
It really is. And by the way, I thought you looked great in it. You showed me all the outfits in Boston. I like them. They were great.
I was showing Kate. And she's like, this actually looks good. And then I was like, oh, that's because I bought them at full price with Jeanette. And she helped me. But the point is, it's still like a visceral reaction. It brings me a lot of anxiety. It triggers a lot of the stuff around the past. And I think part of locking down on like feeling good about the clothes that I have is that I think I cling on to, but if I could just only lose 5 to 10 pounds, and if I did, then these clothes wouldn't fit me anymore, and then I'd have to go buy new ones. I've been saying that for 15 years. Or maybe I should just buy clothes that fit me now. You know, I think there's this struggle about, well, I don't feel like my BMI is a little too high. And it's funny because guess what? Out of all of us, I work out the most.
Yep, you do.
I came from working out this morning. So I'm strong and I'm healthy, but at the same time, I'm pear-shaped and I feel still a little scarred from what my elders have said to me over time. Because then I just always feel like I'm always an eyesore or like, why don't I just try a little harder? It's very frustrating because at the end of the day, these are my genes and this is what I look like. However, my sister got some other great jeans and she looks like the Asian cute. You know, she's petite. The curves are all in the right places. And for me, you know, I look like a Teletubby, you know? And I'm like, damn. Well, the thing, Susan, is that like you and your sister have different bodies. I feel like this is my biggest learning thing. And I'm going to sound like a style article for a little bit is that when we are young and susceptible, our elders are teaching us. I think in Asian culture, there's one type of body and one style of face that's like acceptable, depending on the culture, right? Like in Chinese culture, when I was growing, I actually had that face for a while. Like my mom's face, they call it the watermelon seed face, like round on the top forehead and then, but like pointy on the bottom. You know, obviously thin, but not like skeletally thin. Your boobs couldn't be too big and your butt couldn't be too big, like just slim. And I feel like whatever culture you grow up in, and this is very different for different cultures, right? Because I think, for example, when I go to Miami, the style of body that's valued there is very different, right? It's like curvy, booty. But then women are still doing stuff to get there. Brazilian butt lift. You know, my trainer told me that her friend went to Miami from Seattle to get a Brazilian butt lift because it's cheaper and better there. Anyway, my point is that without passing judgment on which culture has the quote unquote best body stereotyping, none of it is good, right? You think like, oh, that's the desired body type. And then you see the clothing on that body type, right? And you think, okay, that's how I should dress to look good. But the thing is, we all have really different bodies, you know, and we shouldn't be dressing the same way. And Susan, like the clothes that you picked, I thought were really great because I felt like they emphasized what was really great about your overall look and your body. If you were wearing cigarette jeans and things that aren't like the best for your own body, you would have had a different effect. And I think part of growing up for me is that I've learned how to dress for my body. Like when I look at pictures of myself in my 20s, I'm like, oh, like the cringe comes from also wearing clothes that magazines were telling me, oh yeah, this is what you should be wearing. But I didn't have that body type. Yeah. It's like for white women who are like 5'10".
Yeah. Have you guys ever wondered why so many American brides are really into strapless wedding dresses when they really shouldn't be wearing them? This is kind of a mean thing to say. But when I look at a lot of wedding photos, I'm like, you should be wearing something else that makes you look better, not wearing something like that's strapless. But I think that's the American ideal is like the strapless bodice with the flared big ball gown because it's very Disney princess, right?
Yeah.
I was like, wait, I think that was what mine was, but it's because I have good shoulders, guys.
Yeah, you know, I'm just saying, but not everybody, depending on your shape, your weight, like all these things, right? And I feel like this is what plagues women and probably men too, maybe to a certain extent, is that we just feel like we have to dress a certain way because that's the style. And we don't think about what is my body. There's a fine line there where, yes, you know, do you want to be healthy? Is there a way that you could be healthier? Sure. But like everybody has a base body. And you're not going to really be able to deviate from that except with maybe extreme dieting, liposuction or other, you know, plastic surgery interventions, none of which we advocate. And so I felt like for me, part of growing older is realizing I have this body. I'm never going to have boobs that are like this big or a butt like that's this big. You know, like when you have that like silhouette, I can wear certain things that look great on my body. And so I don't know. That's like a wisdom, though. I wish I don't know. I think some people can have it earlier, But I feel like I followed trends a little bit more. So I was like, oh, I always wanted to wear whatever was, you know, people were telling me this is what you should wear. And what's interesting, though, is, Susan, when you were talking about, you know, being
a Teletubby.
No, I was thinking when you said you didn't have a lot of money to spend in college. The thing is, you know, I'm reminded of this comment that one of our classmates, who I shall not reveal the name of, but it was a guy a few years after we graduated. I was telling him about my family and, you know, my family background. He told me, like, hey, Kate, you know, it was funny. I always thought you came from a really wealthy family. And I was like, really? And I was like, why did you think that? And he said, oh, because you dress so nice. You know, it was really funny. I was shopping on eBay in college. I mean, my parents definitely, you know, comfortable income, but like we weren't wealthy by any means at the time. And, you know, I just got like a little, I was on work study, which if for people who remember, like that's the government gives you like money or gives the school money. So if you get employed at the school, you can get paid. But I would go on eBay. You know, I just learned that was like the golden era of eBay where I just found all these like nice looking things, but for really cheap because it was on eBay and it was, you know, probably like a knockoff, right, of a designer thing. Interesting how things project onto others. And I think, Susan, you it seems like you probably thought the same. And I realized at the time, I was like, oh, my gosh, I guess I was projecting this image to a lot of people that somehow I was like more affluent than I actually was. But that was because of the sartorial choices I was making. But I was shopping on eBay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like what's funny is to a certain extent, I still do the same thing. Remember our last one of our previous episodes, I was joking about finding I like nice things, but I always go find ways to buy them at not full price. And I feel like that's something that's still stuck with me. Even to this day where I feel really guilty about buying something full price. Can I confess something real quick outside this like aside? But I feel like it offers a lot of insight into how we grew up, right? Because my parents also grew up buying, you know, I had hand-me-downs or like buy things on sale. Like a couple months ago, I was at Nordstrom and I tried on this jacket and it was really nice. It was actually on sale. But then even on sale, I was like, well, I wonder if I could find it for cheaper. Because I was like, I don't really need like a new thing. You know, there's some like designer resale websites. Seriously, I went on there and I found one in my size and I was like, I know this fits. So that I bought it on there for like half the price of the sale price of the actual item. And Nerv compliments me every time I wear this jacket. He's like, oh, it looks so good. It looks so expensive. How much was it again? You know, I don't know. There's some things I feel like they're very pathological that are very deeply ingrained in us. And even if we've changed our views about how we see ourselves, but our habits are still the same. Like Kate is able to dress better and appreciate herself more, but she's still got the same. I want nice things, but I'm still going to go. It's very hard to get out of that.
100%. Like, right? We were saying, I didn't have money in college, so I didn't buy nice things. Guess what? I have a little bit more money than I had in college. And it's still very hard for me to buy nice things. It's just this, I can't undo it. I mean, I really need, God, Kate, please come over.
Come over okay. And
help me.
Okay, okay, I can come over and help you.
Thank
no
you.
Problem.
But, you know, but it's like a recurring problem because it's just my personality. Like we can rationally talk about all this and it's I still look frumpy. Yeah.
And what's crazy is that it's so much of it is I think this is how you grew up in childhood. Your parents' habits and what they inculcated in you matters so much because I remember when I was working in Beijing, there are a lot of 20 something young girls right out of college who are my colleagues. And occasionally I'd hear them talking about what they were buying or what things cost. And sometimes I would be really shocked by what they were buying for themselves to make themselves look a certain way because I was earning probably, I don't know, 8x what they were earning. But I didn't even spend that kind of money, right? So it's interesting growing up as an immigrant in the U.S., like a Chinese immigrant in the U.S., whereas those people who growing up in China, their parents had a steady rise in affluence. And, you know, the idea of what they should spend their money on to make themselves look, quote unquote, good or whatever is very different from how we have it here in the U.S. as immigrants growing
yeah,
up.
Yeah, it's very easy to, I think, project on other people and to influence what other people assume about you. Like that dress that I was telling you guys that I was wearing. And this girl, she was like 14 and she's wearing designer dresses. And she liked my dress. That was like $12. I think once you start knowing that, that kind of frees you from a little bit of this intimidation or feeling like you need to dress a certain way or whatever, right? I think especially in this day and age, a lot of it is you can't really make a lot of assumptions around where people come from or their financial situation just based on what you see from the outside. It's hard. Susan, I also want to make a comment and
oh, God.
No, just because I've never met your sister. And I was recently served like a suggested post from Socola Chocolates. And so I was scrolling a little bit and there's some pictures of your sister there, like a third party person looking at it. And I mean this as a compliment to both of you. You guys look pretty similar to each other. Yeah, I could tell you're sisters. It's not like you guys look like so different. You guys are both beautiful Vietnamese women. I don't know how old your sister is, but like in your late 30s to early 40s. But it's interesting because I almost feel like sometimes in families, people, especially kids, need to take on a certain role. And then that role just becomes stuck with you.
Yeah.
because you're just not that, you're not like a stick, but you're not overweight, I would say. Just the fact that this has just become like
dynamic. It's like relative to your sister because you're the two women, right? And the siblings.
And yeah, and this has just become like this kind of loop thing, right, in your mind. I think largely because that's what the grownups around you were telling you, right? That became Susan's thing.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yes, living up to the lore of what others expect of you. So in Vietnam, my relatives have a nickname for me, and it's Gok Sen, which means little piece of mud.
Why?
Because they always thought I was so dirty. They're like, have you washed those clothes? I was like, I don't know. I don't care. There's this part of me that was just casual. I don't know if it was just like, who cares? Why does it matter? You know, I think there was something like I had so much resistance to like doing what everyone expected of me, or like, why do we need to keep up with appearances? Why do we need to care about what other people think? That's what I was resisting against. Instead of like, what do I want to have that makes me feel good and makes me feel confident? And because of that, I lived in a very, what's that called? Absolute world, where I thought caring about your appearance means you're vain, means like you are attached to what other people think. And I think that's a sad place of insecurity. I literally lumped it into one pile. And then just let it sit there because I was just so angry and I was so resisting all the pressure that I got from my family because I would never be enough. Under their rules, I was never enough. So it's actually kind of really interesting, Jeanette, that you say that I look like my sister because some other people have said that before. And I'm always like, yeah, right. I described my sister in the book. I was like, she was the one that actually could wear the traditional Vietnamese dress where it looked good. The phrase is goi duc. It looks nice, you know, and I never got that compliment. She was the idyllic daughter that was like plucking she would pluck the herbs like she plucked a zither. She was so elegant. She was like the Vietnamese, like North Star daughter that I could never be, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're right. Like, Jeanette, my entire narrative of my life has been adjacent to her and that I was always compared to her. And then so I was like, well, I guess I'll just do my own thing because no one's really keeping an eye on me anyways. Like, I'm never going to be marriageable anyways. I'll just do whatever I want. But I did have this like tomboy energy, like don't care, you know, because I think maybe deep down I just thought I would never win. I would never be enough anyway. So I can reject the entire system because I will always fail no matter what.
Yeah.
But that's a lot for like a 9-year-old to take on.
Yeah. But also it can be kind of trapping for everybody in it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I don't know. I mean, your sister's not here, but I could see the ways in which having to be that, live up to her role could also be hard.
100%.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And sometimes it just feels like maybe just families under pressure. We all need a shortcut. We can't just see the complexities in people. We just need to assign them all a role. You're the weird one. You're the perfect one. You're the blah, 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 you know, and that's what you are forever and always.
And it's so crazy because it's like, that was the past. That was when we were all living under the same roof. But man, I kid you not, when me and my siblings get together for our annual sleepover extreme indulgence by around Christmas time, we just get right back into that narrative and everyone's roles to play because it's so familiar. It's so known, even though we have evolved and changed as people. That attachment to the expectations of, you know, our elders aren't actively saying, I mean, if you read my book, there's a reason why my elders are not talking about my body anymore. I set some ultimatums. But it was the past, man. Like, it was like 2-3 decades ago. And yet those mentions are like still tattooed into the crevices of the neural pathways of, oh, that's how I should behave. That's how I should feel about myself. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So I try to be really careful about what I say to art and like how we talk about food, how we talk about bodies. I know there's going to be something I say, but overall, just how we talk about it, I'm trying to like really see it and be conscious of it because it cuts so deep.
I think about that with regard to my kids, because I guess I'm the one with the kids of the same sex, right? 2 girls. And I see comments from people like already about the girls. And it's very hard to tell, you know, even if you tell, yeah, I know there's the advice, oh, you should tell your whomever not to say these things, but you can't really control what comes out of other people's mouths all the time without potentially alienating all these family members, which is not really ideal. But I find myself sometimes thinking about what I say to each of them, depending on what they're hearing. So for example, Raya, who's the older one, and this could be a whole separate episode, right? Because I don't have experience with this because of the 3 of us, I'm the only. So I was never really compared to anyone growing up, brother or sister. But now I'm like kind of navigating 2 siblings. And of the 2, you know, one is considered by many Chinese people to be more classically prettier than the other one, which is the older one, right? But then the younger one has bigger eyes, which, as you know, among East Asian cultures, is a highly prized physical characteristic, right? And so people make all these comments. And I don't know. As they grow up, obviously, it'll become more. And then obviously, there'll be comments that I don't hear because right now I'm with them all the time. So I'm hearing those comments. So I don't have an answer to this. You know, looking forward with two girls, I wonder how I can bring some of my learned lessons to make sure things go a little differently for them, you know?
Before we get to the kids, Kate, I feel like we didn't really hear from you yet about
your best body part.
I don't really have a best body part. Oh, yeah, right. I was saying earlier how Chinese people have this idea of the perfect face. And I feel like because I changed so much throughout childhood, you know, there's a saying in Chinese, "女大十八变," meaning a girl will change 18 times before she becomes an adult. And they're talking about features. They're not talking about anything deep. Oh, she'll become like a different person. No, just your looks will change 18 times. And so I remember hearing that a lot as a kid going back to China. I'd say, oh, wow, you've changed a lot. Or, you know, in the beginning, there were some really backhanded comments, let me tell you. The most backhanded comment I heard was, I think this is when I was in high school. They were like, you look like an insert name of this famous Taiwanese singer. And then the comment that always followed was, you know, she's not really pretty, but she's very arresting. She looks distinguished. I'm like, okay. So then I'd Google this person. I'd be like, what? I was so insulted. And then I would get the comments from other adults be like, no, she's got this look, you know? And I'm like, clear saying I'm not pretty, but like I look interesting. Okay, thanks. I got a lot of these like mixed messages growing up. And I think that's why sometimes I would think, oh, yeah, I look like not bad. But then other times I'd be like, oh, maybe I look strange. It was very mixed. And also, you know, I had an eating disorder in high school. And then in college, I gained like 25 pounds. We've talked about this in the past, right? So there's just a lot of body dysmorphia going on, I think, in my teens and in 20s. And a lot of different messages. And I think that's why it took me such a long time to get to where I feel really comfortable in my body and in how I look of my own opinion, regardless of what other people say. I think I used to look more at, I would hear what other people would say about me and then either feel good or bad about it. You know, I think actually having kids helped a lot because, first of all, having kids, like my body has done so much. But also now that I have girls, what is it that I want them to understand about their bodies? And so I kind of don't want to focus on what other people say anymore to set a good example for my girls. Also, it's taught me a lot about, you know, Susan, what you said resonated earlier with me where you were like, I probably work out the most of the three of you guys. And it's true. Like I look like I'm the most classic, like maybe skinny, whatever, can wear anything person. But actually, because of having kids, I've had a lot of health issues that are, you don't see them, right? And it's really taught me the value of what matters is not really how you're looking to the outside. Because I've gotten a lot of comments from people. You know how everybody always wants to comment after you have kids? Oh, you bounce back so quickly. But if you don't hear that, it sort of implied that you didn't bounce back quickly. Heard a lot of bounce back so quickly comments. And then I have to always explain to people, I'm like, I always feel like I have to justify, oh, it's because I had preeclampsia and then I lost a lot of weight because I'm literally leaking massive amounts of protein in my urine and I'm like really skinny, but it's not like a good kind of skinny. It's like a really unhealthy kind of skinny. I don't know. I just feel like I've gotten more appreciation of just how are you really inside physically. It matters so much more, not just on a, oh, like rah-rah feminist basis, but also more on a, how's your health? So I'm more concerned now about that. And also when I ask other people, I don't say, oh, you look great. I'd be like, hey, how's your health doing lately? You know, because I want to be conscious of that. As I've realized as we grow older, it's not how you look that really is an indicator of how you really are doing, how your fundamental health and then which impacts your mental health is. Anyway, all that to say, I feel like I've come a really far way. And similar to what you were saying earlier, Jeanette, I feel like my girls look at me, they think, they'll say things like, it's really cute. They're like, oh, mama, you're so pretty. Or I love your dresses. Sometimes Raya, the older one, will look at me. She's like, mama, you're so pretty. I'm like, oh, thank you. I was like, you're pretty too. But you know what's more important? You're so smart and you're such a good big sister.
Yes, Ruth is already asking me if we can share clothes when she gets big.
Oh, they're already stealing my clothes without permission. They just raided my closet this week and they went in and like literally pulled off all my nice dresses from the closet. Susan, you don't have a daughter.
Yeah, I was like, my son does not say I'm pretty. But we do say we're grateful for each other.
Yeah, I mean, it might just be different for him, but I think it's just more that they look at you and their love for you is not dependent on how you look. I'm sure your son thinks you're beautiful because he loves you. And there is something very kind of profound about that.
That you are enough the way you are, whoever you are,
oh,
for
yeah.
your children because you're their world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also like very humbling and a little bit scary because you're just like, wow, you really love me and trust me. I should try to do a good job.
Right. Or even, you know, when I put on makeup, you know, Raya will be like, mama, why are you wearing makeup? And then I am like, oh God, I'm not prepared to answer this question right now.
Yeah, what do you say?
So also I was like, well, you know, mama has certain features, so she wants to look differently. You know, you don't have to use it because you already have that. But I don't feel quite comfortable with that explanation because I'm like, then it makes me feel like maybe I'm lacking or something. So I'm like, been trying to formulate a better explanation. If our listeners have suggestions, I'm very open to this. Because on one hand, I want to tell her, no, you don't really need makeup. But then on the other hand, for me, I'm like, oh, well, you know, I like to enhance my features with certain things. But I don't know what's appropriate to say to, you know, an almost four-year-old.
Yeah. And this also kind of goes into this area of kids experimenting with makeup. More so girls, but also boys. We don't have to get into it here. But I think it's also just kind of like my mom never let me wear makeup as a kid. And I think also just because I kind of shut down that part of myself, like I said earlier on. I wear makeup occasionally, but not very often. And Ruth has actually not asked me, but what if she said she wants to put on lipstick or paint her nails? I would prefer that she wait until she's older. But I see a lot of her peers doing it. You know, I see a lot of three-year-olds painting their nails.
Well, that is a good point too, Jeanette, because I feel like my parents had very stringent requirements. It was very clear, no painting nails until you're 11. I don't know why 11, but no lipstick makeup until you're like 16. Oh, sorry. And no bikini until you're, no two-piece swimsuit until you're 16. And then no dating until you're 18, right? All these very, I don't want to say arbitrary because obviously maybe they had some reasoning that they never explained to me behind it. But now when I think of my kids, Raya already painted her nails. There's this kid nail polish called Piggy Paint. It just like washes off. And I was like thinking, what's the balance between letting a child express themselves versus this what's age appropriate? And I don't really know. But you know, like my daughters have worn two-piece swimsuits, but I don't think there's anything scandalous in like a two-piece swimsuit. I think what my parents are thinking when they thought of two-piece back in the day, they're thinking of like string bikinis, which I agree. I don't want my kids wearing string bikinis for a long time. But I think that they didn't know the shades of gray. They were just very like, their conception of a two-piece was this very fixed thing. So I think parenting now, when I think about beauty, like these things that in markers of beauty, I think it's partly the thing, aka painting nails or wearing two-piece, but it's also how can you do it in a way that puts less pressure on the thing? Because as with all kids, I think when you put something that's, you can't do this until then, or this is not allowed, their curiosity will grow stronger. It's such a hard thing. And you can apply it to all sorts of things like beauty, candy, you know, like screens, and it's tough. There's no right answer really for any one specific person because people's circumstances and even children's maturity and their grasp of these explanations can vary. So I don't know. That's what's also kind of scary, right? Thinking about it. You're like, oh, I wish you'd just give me an answer. Like, can I just do this? And then it like works. But.
Well, I grew up in a nail salon. So, I mean, there was no attachment to getting your nails painted, right? I'm sitting here going like, what? There was like a limit on age? I don't know. But I mean, it goes back to personality. I think my parents were concerned I was too tomboyish. And then they would put makeup on me if it was like preschool graduation.
What? They put makeup on you for preschool graduation?
Yeah, I saw pictures and I was like, I guess it's kind of cute for me. Like I deviated so far from the path. I remember it was either late high school or early college where one day my stepmom was like, I have to take you to Victoria's Secret. You need to start wearing bras. And I was like, why? I don't have boobs.
When was this?
Wait, how old were you?
Yeah, how old were you?
I think it was like late high school or early college. Like your nipples start kind of showing a little more. I just was like so flat.
That's really late.
That's
to start
pretty late.
Bra.
Yeah.
I know, guys. I'm just pointing
okay,
out.
Okay, that's fine.
It has that's to fine. Do with personality, right?
Yeah.
Like,
right,
like
right,
what,
right, right, right.
What you're interested in, whatever. I was just kind of on the other extreme end where I was like so disinterested.
Disinterested slash rebelling a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's surprised? Okay. So everyone kind of talked about where they are now with their bodies. I will say, my ancestors keep coming to me to smack me around and be like, get over it. Like, just accept yourself. And I recently did a TEDx talk called How to Make Peace with Your Belly Fat. And just like my relationship with my midsection, given that my mom died from a botched tummy tuck, has always been kind of conflicted. I feel ashamed of my midsection. I wish it could be different. That's my quote unquote problem area. And I know every person has a different problem area. And so I've been kind of going on a journey, right? Because I do feel guilty when I'm like, why am I obsessed about this? This killed my mom. Can't I just accept that this is my body type? These are my genes and like I'm healthy and that's good enough and that I can be grateful for this area that created life and that also is the DNA of my mother, right? It's like all these things. So I feel like I've gone on a long journey that is ongoing. It's better, but I will say every night I cradle my belly fat and I hold it. And then I try to get to five things I'm grateful for today. Usually I get to 2 and then I start worrying about all these things. And then 30 minutes later, I'll realize I still haven't completed my list. And so that's like this thing that I'm trying to do is just be a little bit kinder, be a little gentler. I'd be lying to you if I'd be like, guys, I love and accept myself as I am 100%. I love my body. I'm grateful for my body. I love her. You know, it's like she's cool. And, you know, we're better friends now.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. We're not frenemies like we used to be, but we're better.
Yeah.
We hang out sometimes.
I think that's good. Starting from just like an honest appreciation of where you are is, in my opinion, always the best way to make progress.
Yeah. Did you want to talk about kids' stuff?
Sure. I generally do tend to think of it more as an issue for girls. But for all of our kids, you know, they're mixed ethnicity or mixed race. I feel like that also adds like this additional element of how we think about and talk about their appearance. Because I feel like if I talk about like their features that's more affiliated with one aspect of their heritage versus another, that touches on how they think of themselves as, in our case, more white or more Korean. But I think generally I tell them a lot that they are beautiful and cute, which I definitely think that they are. And I think there was a period in which Isaiah was pretty delayed in his weight gain, probably because he had pretty moderately severe sleep apnea. And there was a year in which he only gained 1 pound that whole year. And we actually ended up getting tonsillectomy and also getting his adenoids out. And in the following year, he gained 9 pounds. So to me, that's good evidence. Anyway, I think it was definitely related. But for that whole year, he was like more on the smaller side of his age range, right? And I think just even talking about those types of issues with other adults, like in front of him, Jake was calling me out on just not doing that. But it's hard. I mean, it's practically hard because you don't really see like these people that often. And when you are with them, it's oftentimes when your kids are also there. So I don't feel like this is a values thing, but it's like I'm just sharing information. But I think he also did bring up a good point that I don't want Isaiah to start feeling insecure about his height or weight because mom's worried about it and talking about it with other grown-ups. But post-surgery, a lot of that has kind of resolved itself. I think with Ruth, I think she's very cute, very beautiful. I want to like say those things to her, but I also just want to balance it. In my view, that's not the sole or even the main value that she brings to our family or to herself or to other people, right? I think, Kate, like you were alluding to before, you know, I want to emphasize like how she is with others, you know, how she uses her mind, her perseverance, her hard work, her kindness, right? Those are the things that matter more to me. And so I think I try to both say, hey, I really think you're beautiful. And I also think these things are just as, or if not more important. As she gets older too, I want to have her engage in sports or even I am open to ballet, but I feel like that one I'm a little bit more conflicted because it has such a history of bringing up issues with one's perception of one's appearance. But just something where she could see the value of her body as being strong and being able to do things that's outside of just how it looks to other people. That to me was very helpful in kind of feeling like I love my body and it doesn't have to look perfect, but I still loved it because it helped me accomplish things that I wanted to do. And so I kind of want to promote that for her and for both of my kids. That's kind of how I'm thinking about it somewhat for my kids.
They grew up so fast. This morning, I was getting the kids dressed and Rye stands in front of the mirror and she's like, I want a headband. So she takes a little headband with the bow and then she puts it on. And I kid you not, you know that look when you look in the mirror? She goes like this. The listeners can't see it, but she was like,
she angled her head.
And then she looks at the mirror like posing. And I'm like, I went out immediately to Nerev and I was like, Nerev, I was like, she looks like she's 11 or 13. I was like having somewhat of a panic attack. So I was like, oh my gosh, she's not even 4 and she looks like she's 14. I know the numbers keep going up and I do get these moments, right? And I have to kind of hold myself back because I don't want my fear to lead in how I address this, you know, because it could really backfire. And so what I've started doing is she's like in full princess mode. We tried to avoid it. Unfortunately, I fully embrace it. I like, there's no point trying to like unprincess her now, right? But what I've done now is that as we were watching these princess movies, I'm like, princesses aren't just pretty. You know, look at Merida. She's so brave. She's so good at writing. I'm like, look at Elsa and Anna. They're so nice to each other and they're so good at X, right? And also princesses are really nice. When we're doing things, I now take advantage of her interests. And instead of being like, well, you shouldn't focus on princesses because they're just pretty. You know, I could have done that, right? If I was really fearful. But now I just say, look, princesses, They're not just pretty, but they're really smart. They're really resourceful. They're really nice to everybody. So when she misbehaves, or she's mean and she hits her sister, we'll say things that we're like, you know, do princesses hit people? And she'll be like, no. So I'm trying to like embrace it all together, right? And let her interests direct how I appeal to her instead of, I feel like our parents were always about fear-based or like downward pressure parenting, like informed by their fears, and they would let that show through. I mean, it sounds all ideal and great, but obviously I'm not always good at that. But I try to do that. I try to do that now with them.
That's good. Princesses also have integrity and principles.
Yes. A lot of them are very fit these days. I like Disney's gone, you know, in a good way. I appreciate that about Disney. And they don't always need a dude. Merida doesn't have a dude. Neither does Raya, the princess, not my daughter. Thank God. Yeah, the name. Yeah.
I think for me with a boy, a 3-year-old boy, I steer away from ever talking about how he looks. We don't say like, you're so handsome or whatever. We just don't do that in terms of following your lead on children. Art is really into breakdancing and he's breakdancing all the time in the kitchen. So I'll probably sign him up for a capoeira class. But sometimes we'll have family dance party in the kitchen and then he'll be like, oh, I like that song. That's my favorite. That's my favorite. And I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, Art, who taught you how to dance? Like, who taught you how to break dance? You know what he said? My body taught me.
Oh,
you know, where I'm like, the union between mind and body, between living in the now, being present. The kids already are living correctly, I think. And then we're the ones that are having to do a lot of the unlearning. And so I just love that he's like really listening to the body and is in tune with it. And I celebrate that. And I'm now going to go find capoeira or breakdancing classes or something so that, I mean, he does it. Like, he'll just start doing it. And I'm like, okay, I guess you're into this. This is cool. I don't know. I'm just like trying to encourage that and just really conscious about the stuff around food, you know, and that's probably my own projection, just trying to be conscious of that, you know, instead of you want the mac and cheese, you're eating the mac and cheese. Now you want dried cereal. And I'd be like, can you finish this before we do that? Because he'd be like, I'm so hungry. And I'm like, there's something around like regulating and not being wasteful, but then also just seeing what his body needs or not saying you have to finish this before we do the next thing. You know what I mean? Like just trying to make sure whatever I'm saying is in the service of him listening to his body and being conscious of when he's manipulating me.
Again, potentially different episode, but I was telling Jake, I feel like my inner gauge is broken on those topics. For example, my parents were with discipline, either like pretty permissive or just things blow up. I sometimes feel like my inner gauge for is what I'm doing okay in terms of disciplining my child. It's like broken. It just goes around like it has no information. The easier way is just to be like very reactive and kind of go the opposite direction. But I think that's where it's good to take some extra room and think through things, because otherwise I feel like then you're just going to either go the way your parents went or the opposite way.
We'll always have problems.
Yeah.
But yeah, just doing our best, and we have a little bit more mind share to do it, much more than our parents did. We are good moms. All right, friends, let's wrap with our inside thought here. We've been talking about appearances and feeling good and feeling beautiful. And I'm just curious, what is one thing that you do for you to feel beautiful for you? I'll start. I need to get a pedicure. Like, I should be getting them every 3 to 4 weeks. I really push 6 to 7. But when I take the time to do that, it just feels really nice. And it feels like I'm like trying to put things in order for myself, you know? So I'd say I do love that. And I also love going to the Korean spa and just sitting in heat and lying down and doing nothing. Because afterwards, I'm like really more conscious of my body and how it's feeling. And then I'll like look in the mirror and be like, ooh, look at that glow. Yeah, girl, you do look good. Yeah. There's something around like really taking the time to care for my body and groom for my body that feels very nice. And then cold plunging. Maybe that's good for my pores. But like there's something around just taking the time to like really just focus on my body that I really, really appreciate.
Let's see. These are all contextual. Just, you know, right now, getting a haircut. Sorry, some of these are so basic. It's getting a haircut, blow drying my hair. I do like clothes. I think even if I don't wear makeup very often, I like buying clothes and I feel like I have my certain sense of what I like. And so there are my favorite pieces, depending on the season. And I like wearing earrings, but that's kind of been on the back burner for a long time because my kids are still of the age where they just like to snuggle up and just make random jerky movements. You know what I mean? And there's been times when Isaiah was younger where he's gotten a scratch from one of my earrings. And so I took a long hiatus. I'm slowly coming back. But yeah, earrings are kind of one of my, I don't know, I have these certain pieces and they just make me feel different. It's, this one's a little bit dainty. This one's a little whimsical. This one is like my power one, you know, like my power statement earring. Yeah, so those are things that I enjoy doing about my appearance.
How about you, Kate?
I really like taking time with rituals, right? Which I think especially after, I think I mentioned this in previous episodes, anything that seemed mundane and everyday to us before kids, I've come to appreciate so much more now and come to take this almost ritualistic approach when I get the time, whether it's, I think before I said, I really like just taking a long shower, right? But for me, it's the act of if I'm getting ready to go somewhere, it doesn't even have to be like an event, right? Sometimes Nero will be like, oh, you look nice today. Where are you going? I'm like, to meet a friend for lunch. He's like, what friend? I'm like, Wendy or whomever, you know, like a girlfriend. But if I have the time to just wash my face, put on the lotions and unguents and take my time with the makeup, it's not even the amount. It's just every step in peace with nobody there pulling at my pants or, you know, a fight waiting to be broken up. And I know it sounds, you know, probably to people who don't have kids, you're just like, what? That's so boring. But I think that's actually one of the upsides of then having kids is that you don't take certain things for granted anymore. You really relish in these small moments. And then I think the appreciation develops more when you get them. Like I took the time to really put my little pieces of me together. It's like me, not just Kate, the mom me, right? But just me, who I am, irrespective of the kids. And I feel like myself as a unique individual and not just, again, mom, which is fine. I like being a mom, contrary to what my husband may tell you. But, you know, and I feel like those moments are, especially when the kids are young, it's really nice to hold on to them.
Yeah. Plus one upgrading rituals. We used to be a Trader for our shampoo and conditioner. We used to be Trader Joe's tea tree oil shampoo and conditioner. Like we just.
That's good, though. I like that.
We would just buy them and it was great. So then one day Marvin's like, can we just have nicer shampoo? I was like, I don't care. If it really matters to you, sure. And so we're doing like Kiehl's olive oil or whatever. And I'm like, don't tell me how much it costs. I don't want to know how much it costs. It's just small changes because, yeah, you're alone. And I shower with the door open because in case Art needs something. But it's so nice to be like, I deserve premium products. I deserve premium products.
This is what Jake says about Kiehl. He says, you really like their product, but you wish it was about 30% less. And I'm like, you're right where they want you.
But he uses them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How do you measure the utility of those, like of something you do so much, right? Like, I don't, anyways, that's another thing. Well, you two are a bunch of baddies and I think you're attractive, but you shouldn't even care what I think. It's about what you think about yourself, but I think you're cute.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. You're each a lovely flower in your own right.
I'm glad you affirmed my fatty face today.
It's not fat. It's called, you still have all that luscious collagen and it's good, Susan. Just embrace it. You want to give some to me? I'll take that syringe. And,
well, you know, then that goes into plastic surgery and I'm not into that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I have been eating a lot of oxtail pho.
That's very good for you. The collagen.
It's so good. But no, seriously, my face looks like a quarter.
Susan, you have a lovely face.
Thank
Both
you.
Of you do.
Thank you.
Let's appreciate it because 10 years from now,
oh, yeah.
10 years from now, we're going to look back and we're like, why didn't we appreciate ourselves? Because we look so good.
Yeah.
We were in like the prime of our lives. Like the prime of our lives.
Let's instead of a quarter, maybe I look like a pencil, you know, just like everything's just sagging narrowly down or something.
A quarter is a beautiful coin.
It sure is. All right. And that's it for Model Minority Moms.
We hope you found something helpful, reassuring, or interesting in this episode of Model Minority Moms. If you enjoyed the episode, please help us spread the word by texting a friend about our show or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you want to connect with us, please visit our website at modelminoritymoms.com or follow us on Instagram, where we love receiving messages from our listeners.